contains pretty good basic package, brings you
Phoenix City.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix City. We've got a full complement here tonight. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
Good evening.
I should probably start by apologising and saying sorry for there not being a pod last week. Completely my fault.
Yep. What did you do, Frosty?
You know full
confess
well.
I know, but I'm wanting it on the record.
Yeah, and the people don't. They deserve an answer.
I tried to get prepared the night before and put the gear in the car, except I took the wrong car.
And when did you realise this?
Hashtag first world problem. I took the wrong car. Yep. I took the Jeep instead of the Land Rover.
Strange you should say that. But
And so when did you realise, Frosty?
When I rocked up to my own office, seeing the three of you standing outside and realised that none of you had the gear. Oh, crap, that's right. It's in the back of the car on the other side of the harbour. So sorry about that. But I promise we will get to the Brisbane game right now. So let's talk Brisbane right now because it's actually worth going back to. Hey, tick in the W column.
That feels like it was coming though, to be fair. And a lot of commentators had said our performances were better than the results that had come our way. We had a really hard start to the season. Brisbane's probably the easiest game we've played thus far, perhaps.
Table suggests Perth, but
yeah, exactly. But at the time, you wouldn't have thought that.
No, so,
yeah. And to be fair, victory as well. Tough start to the season, and we'd been playing some good football, so it was really only a matter of time for me.
Yeah, and up until that point, I don't even think this was our best game. It just happened to be the one we got the result in. I think we'd played much better football in some of those earlier games and just didn't get the result. And that's not to say we played badly by any stretch, but I didn't think this was our best football. I think that's changed post-Adelaide game, but at the time, that was, you know, our best result in terms of score, but not our best result in terms of what we put out on the field, in my opinion.
I agree with the quality of football we put out. I think the factor there was that we didn't concede those really, really sloppy chances. Mm-hmm. Even the goal, well, we should probably talk about our goals first of all. Nice early set-piece goal. I don't know if anyone's still keeping count when the last time we got a corner.
To be fair, we've scored more set-piece goals than recently, it was a thing under Ernie. But after Ernie, it hasn't really been a thing anymore. No. We've started to score it relatively frequently. That was a really nicely worked move as well. Short corner from Davila. I can't remember who he passed to.
Roof rising.
And the cross across to Taylor at the far post. Mm. And a really easy finish. They're heading it down to make it hard for the keeper. Keeper's got quite close to it, to be fair, with his hand. But it was just...
Yeah, you're always off balance when you're having to scurry across like that.
Exactly. Mm. So it was nice. And it's like, Taylor wasn't unmarked, but it was pretty much a free header.
Well, he just ghosted in between the two defenders and just, there you go, they're both thinking, well, the other one's got it.
And
one of them was basically marking the post rather than actually keeping an eye on his attacker. But, it was half a free header and he's made the most of it.
I think.
Yeah, if your defenders can pop up with those goals every now and then, it makes everyone's job a lot easier. Certainly it did for the rest of that game. Kept the tail up pretty well. And then Davila, nice little piece of work.
End of the second half,
Can I tip my hat to you, Cameron, right now? You were calling for Davila in at 10, and I think he's been great there.
He has.
Getting on the ball more, getting on the ball higher, and started to look like he's really dangerous with the ball at his feet. I mean, that's the first time I've seen him really dribbling at players in traffic. Before it's kind of been one-on-one and he's got a lot of space and they've been drifting off him. But, you know, getting in between two and three players, it's really nice.
Little shimmy, just the movement of body weight and a slight shift of the ball, he's finding just enough space to beat players. Mm. Enough to make them commit and then still being able to shimmy past them. It's good to see. Yep. And also playing in the 10 role, he's getting the ball and tends to get the ball in space. doesn't need lots of space to be able to do to work his magic, but he does tend to be able to find this, the pockets of space to receive the ball, which is really good.
I think that's the right term, though. He finds the space.
Yeah.
There isn't just space there. He's just drifting quite nicely.
And it's like, pockets, too. It's not like he's finding acres and acres. He's finding where the man isn't enough for him to get on the ball and look for the next best option.
I think that's – Ball reminds me. I think David Ball should get a lot of credit for this, for the way he drops back and and takes defenders with him, leaves them kind of in half, you know, no man's land, really creates a lot of space through that centre. That was obviously when David Ball was playing at the Apex. And, yeah, I think that that's made a hell of a difference. I mean, that we should really talk the goal. It was right-hand side, drifts in, gets a bit of time, beats one, beats two, I think.
Yeah. Shifts it out.
Shifts it out and just drops it onto that left foot. Buys himself, I think, maybe half a yard over his defender and just goes back against the run from right to left into the right-hand side of the goal. Goalkeeper's left. Just beautifully taken.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was a lovely, lovely goal.
Yeah, and you can really see that he's starting to come into, you know, a lot more confidence sort of as what's got on.
Did you see
that? Celebrated that right in front of me. Roof has launched himself over the hoardings and landed right in, like, between the distance across this table between us. And he's missed my camera, which I'd put on the ground, by literally millimetres. Yeah. We've landed and stood right on it in his boots. I was like, Jesus Christ, that was close.
Yeah, he would have rolled his ankle. It would have been your fault.
Exactly.
Yeah. did you guys see the stats that were coming out about Davila's touches as the season progressed?
No.
There was a tweet, basically. He was starting at, I think, the first full game he played, he got like something like 50 touches. Then it was 60, 70. And I think this most recent game, he got up to 87 or something touches. And it's not just the touches, the
quality,
the getting on the ball. It's also now that he's a bit higher, he's still getting, right on, getting a lot of possession. I think it's really interesting. He's really kind of moving into the season pretty well.
I think we've got to give a bit of a shout out to Domi, because early on in the season, Domi was talking him up and we were all kind of not seeing it. We thought, oh, I don't know about that. He certainly doesn't look like one of the best players in the league to us. But we're now starting to see that. I don't think it's as flashy as it kind of might have been. It's not step overs and, making defenders look like idiots, but it's really effective what he's doing. He's finding space and it's not flashy, but it's doing the job and it's only getting better and better. And
I think, you look at his ball position when he dribbles, it's right on his toes. It's very
I think it's the sort of like technical skill that someone who's played football can appreciate, but not necessarily that flashy thing that you see a highlights reel as someone not that in football and go, wow, that was cool.
Yeah.
It's not that.
It's a very polished skill.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, Domi was right. We couldn't see it then, and I completely say we were wrong about that. He's doing very well and is going to do very well in the league if he keeps this up.
Well, yeah, when Domi came on the pod and before it had been announced, he said that this guy's going to light the league up.
Yep.
It's like, the last two games, obviously this is the first one we're talking about, the Brisbane game still.
And he actually had another goal, obviously chalked off for an offside. Mm. You guys might have seen that better than I did. I didn't see any offside there. I just saw him slot in a second or a third for us, his second. But it was pulled back. I assume it was correctly from VAR for offside.
Was it Roofer offside or?
I can't remember who it was, but I do remember during the build-up thinking, that's offside. I don't think this is going to stand.
And then
that came to pass.
Yeah, I don't recall the detail either, but I remember thinking that's the right call.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, up 2-0, and I think pretty much we got into the 80th minute and started getting, obviously the nerves started to jangle a bit and get a bit sketchy. I don't think the fever pulling shirts off probably helped things.
It was nice to be able to do it for a change though, wasn't it?
I wasn't
Frosty
there.
Wouldn't know.
No, I was up in the far north just sitting there sweating bullets, not allowed to swear in front of my in-laws. So.
Why?
Yeah.
I like that that's his biggest complaint.
He wasn't allowed to swear.
It was really on his nerves that he just couldn't let some out.
Jen's mum was insisting that I turn the commentary up because I had it on silent because we were sharing a motel room. And I'm just sitting there like, no, I don't want
to. You and Jen's mum or all of you?
All of us. All five of us.
That's good clarification. But she wanted to listen and you would refuse to let her.
No, she wanted me to listen. And I'm like, I don't want to hear it. The nerves were jangling all the way up in Whangarei, to be honest.
Yeah.
Obviously Brisbane tried to bomb forward and got, I think, I think it'd be fair to say good reward, considering that they really had a go in that last 10 minutes. Nicely taken goal by Stephen Mork.
Well, they did have another one ruled out for offside, I believe, as well. Was that right?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah, and obviously they did have the clearance off the line earlier in the match
True,
as well.
Yeah, so forgot about that.
They're probably good for the goal that they got, like just a reward for the game that they had played. I think the scoreline was fair, though. I think we were the better side.
Oh, yeah, bossed it.
Yeah, and it was just the last, really a couple of chances, the last 10 minutes that they really came back, and that's because they were chasing the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I just got the impression from that last, say, 10, 15 minutes that we just hadn't had enough time where we were defending a lead, and we just kind of weren't sure. Like, it's easy when you're kind of behind, you kind of go, oh, right, we're just going to let the leash off and just go. Kind of a little bit in two minds, and, you know, young players.
Mm.
New professionals, and you know, you've got to say, well, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, and there's a reason why they say in football like 2-0 is probably the most dangerous scoreline to have, because you've got enough of a buffer to think, oh, we should be okay. Theoretically, we shouldn't concede and we shouldn't lose, but you know, let one loose and then
I'll just hit the cliche bingo soundtrack.
Thank you.
No, don't even have it. I wish. No, when we get the fever spend up money that we always have, we'll definitely buy a soundboard.
Yeah.
So, yes, ended up, I think, 85th minute, Stephen Mork goal, but held on nicely at 2-1-1. Pretty good in the zone, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, it's always nice to have a win. So, good spirits up there, really.
Yeah. Right, so we should probably just kick straight on to the Adelaide game, seeing as we're kind of having a roll in for a bit of a doubleheader. This was interesting. Adelaide, obviously, being quite steady and reasonably successful in the top four, I think, at the time.
Yeah, well, they were on four games unbeaten until that point.
Yeah, so they were definitely rolling out points. I think there was more than a couple of draws in there, but still.
Yep. Our record going over there is incredibly poor as well. So,
well, it's kind of the joy of having such a young side. Mm. They don't know about it. They don't care about it. Why would you? You know, it's only, I think, probably Taylor that's played over there for the Knicks, I would say. Wouldn't be too. Oh, Rufa.
Rufa.
But there wouldn't be too many.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that, you know, probably not too much of a hangover. But unfortunately, kind of looked a bit that way that first 20 minutes. Adelaide just on us like white on rice.
So I missed the first 20 odd minutes because I was putting my kid to sleep and he doesn't sleep. So it took a while for that to happen.
And then you came in and we looked good.
And we looked fantastic. Yep. I was like, what I saw of the first half, I thought we absolutely bossed the game and deserved to be absolutely like three or four goals up. We were that much better. We had all the possession. We were creating all the opportunities, really beautiful, intricate passing maneuvers, like strikers finding space, port runs, everything you could possibly want in that
looked
final
pretty
third.
Good, eh?
Transition work was excellent. There were like fast breaks were good. When the fast break wasn't on, our transition work was good. The hold-up play, Rufa was brilliant. He was absolutely fantastic. And the work that he's been doing with Steinman was fantastic. Honestly, I didn't know how we weren't 3 or 4-0 up in the first half. And when I heard that actually 0-0 was probably fair, I'm like, well, I didn't see it. I did not see.
I don't even know that 0-0 was probably fair. A draw would have been fair, but it should have been about 3-3, to be honest. That we were very poor to start with, and they deserved probably to be up by 2 or 3. And then we got into it and similarly looked like we should have scored a few.
Yeah, there were golden chances at either end. Obviously, we should probably just go straight to that first goal. Cam, we're not listening to your opinion about this. I'm sorry, mate.
It was bullshit.
It was a fantastically taken goal. Yep. Miljušić on the left-hand side of the box.
He shinned his shot.
He has
and scooped it accidentally over our keeper.
He has chested down, hit the volley with the outside of the left foot to curl it up over and round.
I think there's a bit of shin in it too.
Shin. But left shin.
The curl he gets is completely intentional.
Oh, yeah, he's going for that.
The fact he's hit it as sweetly as he did in terms of the placement is a bit of a fluke, but he's absolutely gone for that, and it's come off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to call it fluke. He played for it and got it. Would he get it once in another 40 attempts? I'm going to say no, but he tried it and he got it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that was a bit of a against the run of play. That was close.
It was a gut punch. They didn't deserve to have the lead at that time.
But the interesting thing is when they turned around and ran back, the look on their faces were like, shit, we're getting away with murder here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and they didn't look like
they were.
they didn't look that confident considering they just got one against the run of play and you know, at home and normally pretty good for a result. So that, I thought, said a lot about the way we were playing at the time. And sure enough, so the first goal was ball?
Yeah.
Ball. So nice bit run up the right-hand side, a cutback, very nice dummy by Hooper to drag the defence across. And then ball slotted in behind basically from the penalty spot and hit it a bit close to the keeper for mine, but has managed to do it from such a range.
I mean, given how close he has been putting it to the keeper previously, at least this one went round.
Yep. Yes, he looked very relieved. Yeah. Very happy. Well, very, very happy.
Well, when it was almost immediately after Hooper had come on. I think we've talked previously about how just Hooper being on the park, even if it's not necessarily him, does seem to bring a bit of energy to everyone around him. And you know, in this case, there was a great run by him. But just having him on the park really seems to lift things in that final third. Some stuff starts happening, even if it's not directly him. And that was exactly the case here. He comes on and we almost immediately score.
Well, I think what he does is create space for other people.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because they immediately know he's not the guy you can leave.
Yep.
He's not the guy. You probably, at this level of football, you probably need two on him.
Yep.
And that just means there's space for Ball and Davila to actually work some magic.
Was it Soterio that put the ball across?
It was.
I think it might have been. So almost half makes up for that horrible miss.
The one-on-one.
The one-on-one.
Yeah.
That was appalling. Yeah. That was appalling. At that level, he has to score that goal.
No,
his whole career he hasn't, though.
I mean, was he going for the nutmeg of the keeper for that one?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Clearly
yes,
not working, was. But...
Yeah. Well, he gets it right between the legs, and it's going through. It doesn't hit the leg. It awkwardly hits the backhand of the keeper, which is behind his body. But that's the only thing he gets on it is a part of his body that I would argue he doesn't really intend to get on it. That's not textbook saving there, because it does go through the legs. But it's that thing of Soterio has problems finishing. We know that. But I think I was talking earlier in the season about how he's going to come right for someone eventually. To me, it looks like he almost is. He's offering us a hell of a lot everywhere but in front of goal. And he's not an out-and-out striker, but as a winger, he's actually making some good runs and he's doing a lot better than we've seen from him in the past. I mean, I'm not going to say it's the finished product and it's you know, like a top-level A-League player, but given how he has gone previously, he's going pretty well for us, to be honest.
I think his work rate and certainly his efforts outside the box are very noticeable.
And they seem to be improving week to week as well. I think he looks better
Do
and better.
Think?
Not finishing. Ignore finishing. Assume his finishing is atrocious because no one's going to say that that's going well. But yeah, I think he's offering more and more each week. And I think that's partly down to Talle finding a role that works for him. You know, he ends up one-on-one through on goal. That's not the role you're expecting from him, but he's got the pace, so that will happen sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, he's kind of he's not quite the hold-up man, but he's the outlet a lot of the time because of his pace. If their defense doesn't cover up properly, then there is the occasion.
And he's going to make a mess of it.
Yeah, for me.
He could have had four this season by now. Easily had. If he had a finish. Because basically, he's got pace like Roy, but he finishes like me. You know, it's awful.
How many could Ball have had this season? And we still think he's playing well.
The different, he is playing well, though. And his hasn't been bad finishing. His has been good goalkeeping. There's been good goalkeeping in stopping him score.
Yeah, I think the difference is, though, we're expecting Soterio to be Krishna because of his pace, but he's not Krishna, and that's not the role we're trying to do.
He's much more up here than Krishna.
Ooh, ouch. Although, let's be fair, Mr. Arbier is starting for Western United. We'll probably get to that a bit later.
Oh, yes.
How many weeks has it been since they scored a goal? Because he got their last one. Something like 5 hours of football.
Ooh. Yeah, okay. Well, let's cover that off in a second.
Let's cover our second goal, shall we?
I think we should because it deserves a bit of love.
A bit of love? You got plenty of love by being awarded in the first place.
Yeah.
There's no way. Okay, so set the scene. Kakache's run into the box and fallen over by someone touching his shoulder and we've been awarded a penalty. And
It was a bit of a grab. Let's say that. He did reach out. He did make contact.
There was definitely
contact.
100%.
And it was with the hand. He was reaching out. As soon as you do that near your defender, you are asking for a decision.
Yeah, and it's not a shirt grab because that's definitely what happens. But he definitely hooks the arm or shoulder a little bit. Not much. It's very light. But I can see why it's not overturned.
I can 100% like go on record and say that is not a penalty.
It shouldn't be a penalty, but I can see why VAR doesn't overturn this.
If they're defining handball in the box by literally the ball grazing your hand, touching your hand, then they're defining it as a penalty. That's also how they're applying it to this penalty here. On paper, if you just read out the rules and have no context for how football is played and how human bodies move. Okay, fine, it's a penalty. It's soft soft as hell, but technically by the letter of the law, it is.
Yep. Well, let's set the scene.
Well,
I was going to go back even further than that. Davila. He has gone through a couple of players inside the box and has been clipped, but has tried to keep his feet.
Yep.
And basically play on's been waived. I didn't see the ref do it, but surely he's seen the clip and saw VAR did. And there was a bit of a body check from behind as well that everyone seems to be glossing over, and it was all waved on as though that's fine. You're allowed to clip someone's feet and you're allowed to
foul.
Yeah,
but the difference here is that he takes another step and then he hits a shot. Now, the shot is massively off balance because of the foul, but it doesn't get given because they're arguing that getting the shot off was advantage. And, you know, shot on goal from a good position, that's reasonably good advantage. But I think it's pretty clear if you're watching that the shot is not the shot he would have had he not been fouled a step earlier.
Yeah.
And the one about this that really frustrates me, and so the reason it doesn't come back on VAR is because advantage was played and he does get a shot, and that's what the referee's ruled. He hasn't ruled there was no foul. He said, we played the advantage, they got a shot, it's not a goal. But you're basically in that situation punishing the player for trying to keep their feet. If he just goes down, doesn't try and get a shot off, he gets a penalty every time. It's a penalty, ref seen it, penalty.
Yeah.
But in the other scenario, you have Libby not trying to keep his feet, goes down very easily and gets rewarded. This is why players go down in the box.
Yeah.
And you're rewarding it not only through the on-field call, but through the VAR system as well. And it's insane to me. We've got two penalties. One that I think most people would expect to be awarded that isn't, and one that you go, nah, that's not a penalty. And it is. And it's just, it's not how this should be working. And that to me is where the system is broken, is that this is where you'd hope VAR would fix this, if anything. It's like the one, was it in the first half where there's a foul just outside the box? You want to talk about that separately, but.
No, I was thinking more, can VAR rule when the ref has seen it and has said play on?
Well,
I don't know that they can.
So only if it's a mistake, error. It has to be missed.
Yeah.
So it's not a clear and obvious error because the referee saw it.
Yeah.
And so VAR can't say that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not a VAR intervention thing. It's one of the bugbears of...
Correct. The implementation as it stands. But this is what I'm saying, is the implementation as it stands, I think, is not giving us the results we expect. You know, we're getting these handballs that no one likes as handballs. We're getting this Libby very soft penalty confirmed as a penalty. When I think anyone watching that video goes, yeah, that's pretty soft, we should probably overturn that. And we don't. And so the current implementation for me isn't working. There's too many problems with it. And the times it's getting it right are very few and far between. And I think the Davila one where he calls penalty and it turns out it's, you know, just outside, completely the right call. That's what that is there to fix.
That is
fair. And that's perfect. It's clear cut. It goes, you know, oh yeah, there's a foul, but it's just outside. Perfect. We're not getting many of those. Those are about 10% of all the times. You know, we're getting the Louis Fenton handball decisions where everyone's like, what, hits him in the chest? Oh no, that's fine. VAR says yes. We're getting Libby diving. Oh yeah, that's penalty. Yes. You know, it's not working.
No, he didn't dive. There was definitely contact.
Yep.
He has milked it. I'll give you that. But it's only a dive if there's no contact.
That's just not true. Any attempt to deceive the referee is considered a dive by the letter of the law. I would argue that's an attempt to deceive the referee. Whether you agree with that stronger interpretation is up to you, but it's an interpretation.
He said, I felt the contact, so I just went down.
Yeah. I made the most of it. It happened. Yep.
Exactly. And I would argue that's an attempt to deceive the referee.
Is it deceiving the referee, though, because the contact happened?
You're not arguing that contact happened. Yeah. You're arguing the contact was enough to make you fall over, which it wasn't. Mm. That's deceiving, in my opinion. I'm being slightly facetious because...
You are, yes.
But that's the letter of the law. We could be ruling that a dive. We could.
And it is a contact sport and not all contact are fouls. So,
exactly. Yeah.
But you're giving the ref the chance to, or that he has to make the decision.
Yeah.
Which is what you're saying. You're making the ref make the
decision. That's not what we should be rewarding. Mm. That play should not be rewarded. You should reward Davila for trying to keep his feet. Mm.
So in saying that, I still think we deserve the lead. When he saw
that's not the goal we deserve, though.
No, not at all. But it was great to have the lead. I didn't watch that pen. I always watch our pens. I couldn't watch that one.
I am touching wood here, but yes, Davila has been slotting them. The goalkeeper went the right way, didn't get
I saw the replay. I saw it live.
And I pretty much all of us have been into the side netting, back corner, whatever.
Unfortunately, my app was slightly ahead of the game, so the notification came up on my app just before he scored it. So I wasn't sure whether it was going to be notification missed pen or notification scored pen, so I still didn't look.
So, yeah, I mean, it's nice to be able to go, actually, I think as far as a penalty taker, we've got one here. I would say there's probably a couple of able backups in Hooper. And I think Steinman has taken a pen before in his time, but I might just be talking about the wrong guy. But yeah, Davila is slotting them. It is nice to know that if we do get fouled in the box, as does happen in the A-League, that we have someone who is able to most times make reward out of it. Just a shame that it came from that.
Yeah.
Mm. But in the A-League, if you hit the side netting, you're probably going to score. And that's what he's doing. He's hitting the side netting. So keep that up, and it's almost a free goal every time.
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, that's most leagues. I mean, because he's not hitting it gently. No. He's giving it a good nudge. The only thing I would criticise is the height. He's not going high or low. He's kind of a bit middly. But
don't think it matters if he's hitting the side
netting. Hitting the side netting, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good result for us. Adelaide in Adelaide.
First time in 5 years. Only the fourth time we've won there out of 20-something, 21 games.
And we don't
games.
Even get that many draws there. Coming away from Adelaide with points is pretty rare.
Yeah, very rare. They would have probably won 13 or 14 of the times we visited, so I'm pretty happy with that result.
And to do it in the manner we did, I mean, the first 20 minutes aside, I think basically the next 89 bar a couple of minutes and that Milusinic wonder goal.
Fluke. We were excellent.
Yeah, our transition was good. Our passing was good. We looked like a very, very slick unit.
And credit to Talay as well. His changes were excellent. I mean, he made some ones that I think were quite interesting calls, but they came off. They really Devlin, worked.
Yeah, the Devlin into shore up defence. And then...
So when we went behind, pulling off Steinman and bringing on Hooper.
Hooper, yes.
And then pulling off Soterio and bringing on Devlin... and then also bringing on, I think it was McGing. That's it. I always get that wrong. Bring on Liam.
Just pronounce it how it's written rather than trying to be a dick to him.
Struggling with that name. I think it was bringing on Liam late to shore up the defence as well. So, it was just very shrewd. Even the starting lineup, bringing Piscopo on instead of playing a coward.
That's a bold call.
It's a bold call, but it worked.
Yep.
He was good.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Another player that was very good in both those games, actually, Mr. Payne.
Yeah, he's done the world of good, actually.
With the exception of a couple of very errant crosses that I think almost killed a couple of ball kids about 40 miles behind the goal.
Again, he's not a right back. He's doing the best he can in a position he's not qualified to play, and he's actually doing okay.
Yeah, I think he got man of the match for the Brisbane game, actually.
I'm not sure, to be honest. But
oh, no, sorry. It was Taylor that got man of the match for Brisbane. I think he got man of the match for this game.
Davila got man of the match.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I don't think it's Payne. He might have got some Tobin points.
Yeah.
Mm. But, I think that's the thing. I don't think he's been amazing. A few people have said he has, but I do think for a guy who doesn't play that position, he's played it pretty well.
It seems to be a next thing is, like, we'll put whoever plays right back and isn't actually right back, he does pretty well.
Yeah. So he's not offering as much as a proper right back would, but he's not making an idiot of himself out there, which is all we can ask when we don't have a right back to put in there.
Shows me you've got good footballers, isn't it? He's a good footballer. Yeah. He's got a great basic package. And when you put him
are you just going to let that slide or no?
A great basic package, yeah. But when you put him out on the field, and even in a position where he's not naturally gifted, then, he does all right.
Sorry, I just want Patrick to insert that. Not a net. Yep. Anyway. I mean, to be fair, I don't think that anyone had a bad game. Obviously, we're giving Rufa plaudits, but I don't think he's getting those plaudits without Steinman doing a power of work back there. Really good cleanup work. Again, bullying guys, using his size but still being fairly mobile. Soterio working like a Trojan. Piscopo, McCowart, almost interchange, like running at players. Hooper dragging people with him. It's pretty hard to think of someone that isn't playing well.
I can't disagree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice problem to have. If we can just manage to get those small little errors out. And let's be fair, I mean – there weren't the glaring errors in that Adelaide game that we'd had previously. You know, the shots inside the 10 yards.
And the line of four defenders on the goal line or the 6 yard box kind of
or
thing.
Just not doing.
Yeah.
It seemed like there was desperation defence more than a few times, but we managed to get close enough to put them off, and Marinovic kind of did the rest and tidied up. I thought he was tidy, very solid. Distribution was decent.
Didn't have a lot to do, to be fair.
Hmm. The defensive work looked a lot less concerning than it has at other times. We've looked very scrambly. This looked a bit more composed. Still not perfect. I mean, there's things to work on there for sure, but it didn't look the same kind of, panicked effort it has in the past. It looked a bit more like we were knowing what we're doing back there and it was working, which has obviously helped when your midfield's going that well and, you're scoring goals at the other end and all of that. That takes some pressure off. Hmm. But it looked like the best defensive performance I think we've seen.
My only issue that comes out of that is how profligate we are in front of goal.
Yeah, we do need to start banging in a few more. I think that will cost us, even if we manage to keep the defensive effort up. I think you're 29
shots I think we had in that game for two goals.
Yeah.
Like even on an average return would be somewhere between one and every 6 to 8 shots. It was a pretty standard return in a football game. We should be scoring 4 or 5 in that game. We got 2. So that's a concern.
Yeah, it is. I'm hoping that Hooper turns that around a bit more and hopefully Ball. Yeah. But I mean, the problem is I think people are going to start seeing how good De Vella is. And they're going to know he likes to run with the ball at his feet and he'll do it from deeper. And they'll go, you know what? He's 30 yards out, 35 yards out, which is chop him now.
I think the key there is if Hooper is starting, they're not really going to have the personnel that can do that all the time. He's going to find some space at a point in time, which will cost them.
Yeah. Mm. And I think you've got 3 players there you have to be a bit worried about at all times. If you can get Hooper on the field, you need to be worried about Ball as well and De Vella. Mm. Like there's only so many yellow cards you can get cutting guys out 30 yards down before you've got to just let some football happen. And you can't kick all of those guys out of the game at the same time. But if it's just Ball and De Vella, you might have a chance of doing a bit of that. So we need Hooper to get more and more minutes. Mm. I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah, I think that Hooper's going to be the key. I mean, Ball and De Vella are, they're the in-between the lines guys, and you can kick in that zone.
Yeah.
And we've seen the A-League do this countless times because the refs don't protect the players, blah, blah, blah. But,
Much as Hooper's role is going to be that apex, he is a guy who likes coming back and getting the ball. He's going to do some work once he's fit, but he's not there yet. But he is going to be a guy who's going to go, no, you run through and I'll come back and get it. And, there's going to be a bit of that. So I think it's going to be interesting. They're going to have to watch more.
Mm. Yeah. Hopefully we can start getting a bit of form out there. So obviously there's been we won't cover the A-League of the Brisbane round, but we should.
While Cam looks that up, I want to complain about one thing. I complained about it on Twitter, but I want to complain again because why not? And I don't know if you guys noticed it. But after the game, Robbie Slater tried to blame the Adelaide crowd. And it was just appalling. It was one of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen. That the team on the field could feel that the crowd, that was just a smaller crowd, and they could feel that energy wasn't there. And that's why they were a bit flat. I was like, that's just embarrassing. That is one of the worst takes I've ever heard about a football game in my life.
And just to be very clear
as well, their crowd was a little low, but they had test match cricket on in Adelaide and it's a late game on a Sunday. Like, I'm sorry, but people might have been at the cricket. Australians do tend to like that. Hmm. And honestly, trying to blame the crowd for the team's performance is just appalling take from a commentator that should know a lot better than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not hear that and I'm glad I did not. That's punchable.
Yep. It was just ridiculous. It was just after they'd done the on-field interviews and they were back in the studio talking about the game and his first take of what did you think of that? Oh, I think the crowd was blamed. It's like, no. Unbelievable stuff.
No, apparently there's 11 blokes on the field that have more to influence about it. We should probably kind of slightly tangent on to Mick Lynch commenting on the crowd for Western United. Mm. Even Lynchy has commented that is it a dark and dire place, I think.
It's horrendous to watch football at.
Yeah, the low stadiums and he's, what do you call it, 90% empty.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were a very very euphemistic 4,000.
Optimistic, optimistic 4,000.
Oh, no, it's not even optimistic.
they also have now, so I was obviously over there, I watched a game a while ago where they were opening all the stands. They've now started closing 3 sides, so it's just one stand that's open now. So the the crowd you're seeing is all on the TV side. Previously, there's a bit on the other side, but the crowd numbers are trending down, and that's even like condensing the crowd in this horribly big stadium that no one can see into one smaller area. It's dire for them. They need to. This is why you don't give a license to a team that don't have a stadium. Their only selling point of their license bid was that they're going to have a stadium. We'll wait till they build it. Don't give them the license till then. It's craziness.
Yeah, I mean, how many? It's Cogra, isn't it? No,
Cogra's in it. It's Geelong.
Yeah, the Cogra is the one with the massive field because it's the AFL one. Is that right?
No, you're mixing up Sydney grounds. This is the big AFL stadium. It's not called Cogra though. Cogra's in Sydney. Okay.
So you're a mile away from the pitch. It's only a smaller stadium anyway.
Well, it's a 40,000 seat stadium.
Well, you're competing and Amy and yeah. And you're getting 4,000 people in.
Yeah.
At best. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
And then this time around, they obviously had problems with kicking out most of the Cove. Which, yeah, it sounds like there's a few.
Tell us about that. I haven't heard about that.
So security, when I was there, it was notable that security was quite heavy-handed. I don't know if I talked about this when I came back, but I was there for the RBB game, so I was in the bay with the RBB, and I thought this is pretty heavy-handed. You know, there were riot horses bringing running and 20 cops and security and stuff, and I'm like, maybe this is just for the RBB. So I hadn't really ascribed too much to it. You're a new entry into the league. You've got RBB doing their tour of duty game to you. I can understand you might have gone, let's make sure we're prepared. This could be one that kicks off a bit. So I kind of ascribed it mostly to that. But they were pretty heavy-handed. There was a lot of cops coming down and telling people off for pretty minor things like standing on seats and stuff like that. You know, they scored a goal and half the RBB are up on their seats celebrating and the cops are in there saying they're going to get evicted unless they go off the seat right now. And I was like, this is a bit ridiculous, but whatever. You've obviously got all these people here. A lot of the Cove were kicked out for standing on seats. So a few people like the people leading chants were standing on seats, and got warned. So all of them got up on their seats and, you know, kind of form of protest. And it sounds like they lost out and a bunch of them got evicted. There was also some suggestions on Twitter that they'd yelled at some kids or something, but honestly, like, you know, it's a lot of various takes blaming lots of stuff. But I can say firsthand, the security did seem pretty heavy handed, but at the time I'd describe that to, it was the RBB tour of duty game. That felt like if you're going to overreact, that's the one to overreact to. But it sounds like that might just be normal service there, which is not ideal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me too much with Australian security and certainly the image that the Australian media paints of Australian football.
Yep.
It is, basically everyone's a thug, everyone's a hooligan.
Yeah.
And it's just a question of when trouble's going to kick off, which is ironic considering the AFL issues.
Oh, the level they have of violence in AFL games is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But no, so there are photos from about 60 minutes of the game where the Cove are literally having to sit in the away bay because they're not allowed to stand anymore. And a bunch of them have been evicted. You know, they're winning 2-0 on an away trip that they've brought several hundred people to and they're having to sit in the away bay. Something's gone very wrong there.
So safe to say that in a way, there's not going to be too many away fans going to.
I think after how publicly this one went, no. I think the RBB were pretty grumpy about it, but also it's not like everyone has their back. Whereas in this case, the club, Sydney, have come out and said the way our fans were treated was appalling and they're pretty grumpy about it. So that certainly got a bit more traction for it than it had previously been getting.
Okay, so we should probably cover the A-League as a whole. Cam, do you want to take us through the games?
Yeah, so first the round kicked off with Victory beating Perth 1-0. The goal to Robbie Cruz in the 33rd minute. The next game in the round was Brisbane Roar 2, Central Coast Mariners 0, goals to Roy O'Donovan and Scott Neville. The late game on Saturday was Newcastle Jets 2, Western Sydney Wanderers 0, goals to Angus Thurgate and Dimitri Petratos. The game Dave just covered was Sydney beating Western United 2-0 away, both goals scored by Adam Lafandra and assisted by Balmuhan. Nice. And then our game wrapped up the round. So do you want me to go over the table?
Yeah, that'd be great.
If you could just read the top 10, that'd be nice.
Sydney on top with 18 points. Melbourne second with 16. Adelaide third with 12. So a big, big drop between those guys and the rest of the league. Wanderers in fourth with 10. Western United in fifth with 10. They've played an extra game on everybody else up there. Brisbane in sixth on 8. ahead of Newcastle Jets on goal difference, but the Jets have got played one game less than everybody else, and also ahead of Melbourne Victory on goal difference, all on 8 points, who are in Victory in eighth place. They've played one more game than same number of games as Western United. We are sitting in ninth on 7 points, so 1 point outside the six, which is nice after our start. Tied on points with Mariners, but ahead of them on goal difference. And that's the top 10, Dave.
Thank you.
Do you want to cover who's last?
No.
Ouch, that's rough. A couple of interesting points there, though. Western United, seeing as we were just talking about them, bit of a goalless run, Dave.
It's almost like someone called that they were due for a bit of a correction and a fall down the table. I wonder who that could have been.
I wonder.
Seems exactly like what's happened.
Yeah. So what were you saying? It was like,
I think it's over 5 hours since they last scored a goal. So the last time they scored was that game I was at in Geelong, where Dura and Apia scored. They haven't had a goal since then.
Yeah, that's right.
So Apia has taken all the luck.
1-0 loss.
Or Dave has taken all the luck.
Yeah, Dave. 1-0 loss to Jets, 1-0 loss to Mariners, and a 2-0 loss to Sydney.
So three games, all clean sheets against them.
Yeah.
That's suboptimal for a team that's got high hopes and really needs to get people in the doors.
Well, actually, what that says is that, so they've played an extra game, and looking at the round coming up, they're playing that Victory. So, but when they get the bye, they've got every chance of actually falling out of the six, because us sitting in ninth, if we win this weekend, and they lose, we are ahead of them and in the six. Yep. So yeah, they're now on their borderline falling down very quickly.
And it's going to be a big problem for the club as a whole, because even when they were playing well, they weren't getting a boost in crowd numbers. Now that they're on the slump, I don't know where a crowd's going to come from.
Yeah.
You were already struggling when you were doing well.
So. And, you know, you got to wonder if there's going to be any eruptions kind of coming through with, obviously, they're struggling at the moment, but also Mr. Brisher getting benched.
How good was that?
Oh,
yeah, that's... getting subbed and also getting benched, he is not taken well by the look on his face. But then again, the look on his face is never particularly pleased.
I mean, the reality is he wasn't playing that well. He wasn't his normal self. But I mean, the reality is who's the guy who's going to turn a game for you? Is it Apia or is it him? And you started Apia ahead of him, so you know it's a bold call, but maybe it'll give him the fire in the belly he needs.
I think that was probably the motivator, wasn't it?
To be fair, they haven't scored in three and Apia's starting. I think that sums everything up.
Yeah. I wonder if maybe the wheels are starting to get a bit wobbly.
Mm-hmm.
Also, unfortunately, getting a bit wobbly is the Wanderers after a really good start as well.
They've had three losses on the trot.
And they were, rumour has it that Mr. Barbel has been given 5 games to show his wares, and he's coming up to the fifth game, last chance saloon to kind of prove that he's the man to take the project forward, which is a bit rough.
Considering the start they had, to give a guy 5 games to prove yourself, that seems quite odd, to be fair, because they were doing quite well and they're still sitting fourth, you know, and they're coming up against the Knicks, obviously, this weekend, who up till 2 weeks ago were sitting rock bottom with, 3 weeks ago, no points and not even looking like getting a point. So, yeah, it's pretty harsh on him, to be fair.
I question whether that's the sort of thing you can do in the A-League just when you've got such big squad turnovers.
To me, there has to be more to that.
Yeah, do they have someone in the frame if he does go?
Because biffing a coach like him, based on what feels very flimsy arguments, you have to have someone ready to go. Otherwise, you're just putting in a caretaker out of nowhere and you're even more of a mess. So they must have a solid plan in place and have gone There's a reason they're putting the pressure on.
It does seem very, very strange after you've kind of done a lot to pull him in, and he's recruited a whole lot of German talent over. You know, you got to think that if he goes, will those German players be feeling particularly content?
Huge conspiracy theory if you're out there. Popper's doing pretty badly at Perth. Maybe they're about to sack him and the Wanderers want him back.
Wow, did it?
That's a massive straw clutch I've ever heard one, mate.
Imagine it.
Well, yeah.
Oh, the popcorn would be fantastic.
Yes, the popcorn.
The popcorn, nice. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, obviously, Mr. Popper's struggling over in Perth at the moment. They're on a deep dive. Ructions, that all is not well in the camp. And unfortunately, because Mr. Popovich happens to be playing two of his sons in the squad, it's not a good look when your team isn't playing well. So, you know, good coach, good team. I can't see them not turning it around, but I also couldn't see them on the slide that they are now. I mean,
well, the amount of money they're spending, it's hard to believe that they're down there. I mean, coming into the season, we were all in awe of the number of players they'd apparently managed to keep under the cap, and now they're dead last. So
allegedly.
So a few people there on some very, very long backloaded contracts.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, when you can afford to let Andy Keogh go and not be that concerned about it, it does seem very, very strange that this has all gone south so quickly.
So who's heading to Auckland?
Yep.
No.
Yep. Why not?
Going there in a couple of weeks' time to go home for Christmas.
I was only there last week.
Okay.
There was no football then.
No, tell me about it.
No football at Christmas either, I mean, honestly.
Yeah, your timing is horrendous, just putting that out there.
Oh, well, I missed the only home game from, 2 months?
Yeah. You're going to be here for the 21st then, aren't you?
Yeah, we're at home this Christmas, so okay, nice. I'll be able to get.
Okay.
Fingers crossed there's a good crowd up there, though. I think the run we're on and, you know, Eden Park,
and
a game we might get a result out of. I think Wanderers are kind of there for the taking, hopefully. And
the last Eden Park game, the big turnout?
That was the victory game, wasn't it?
Yeah, so you've got to be thinking that.
Surely that's going to be lingering in the memory.
Yeah, you'd hope so.
Hopefully.
The difference there was that game was in the middle of a good run. We'd been playing good football and we're getting loads of points, and so it wasn't at the start of a run, you know what I mean? The momentum and the feel-good vibe was already there, whereas this is two games, only one of them has been at home, and we haven't exactly been scoring loads and loads of goals.
No, but still, you'd think that after a 25,000 turnout, we got 7 points out of the last nine. You know, you'd be expecting at least, 15 or 20.
You'd hope so.
I don't think we'll get a 20. I think we're probably more looking like at a 10 to 12.
No.
But I'm pessimistic when it comes to crowds.
Yeah, surely it's over 15 for mine.
I mean, if it's not, I think that'll be incredibly disappointing.
Yeah.
I think the reality is we know that they don't do such a massive marketing spend up there anymore. I mean, there were years where they used to do billboards everywhere and all of that stuff. That's not the way these Eden Park games go anymore. But you'd hope that the word of mouth amongst the football community was strong enough we see a decent crowd turn up. I think if it's only 10, that'd be incredibly disappointing, because you can get that in Wellington when we've got a good run going. The point of the Eden Park game is to take it to a market that's bigger and therefore get more people. If you don't succeed with that, I think I'd be pretty disappointed with that.
Yep. So predictions. Ella, throw you on first.
Alrighty. 2-0 to us.
2-0. Cam?
2-1 to us.
I'm going to go 3-1 to us.
Yeah, I'm with Cam, I think. 2-1. Nice, edgy.
I hope it goes Ella's way, because I want us to get a clean sheet. Obviously, I want the 3 points. Yeah.
Marinovic really deserves it.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, that is very true.
You see the Q&A he did this week? It was fantastic.
I haven't. His answer for Stephen Taylor's question was gold, but that's all I've seen.
What was the question?
Stevie T asked him why his head's so big.
Oh,
which
nice.
Is ironic.
So you have to go check the video to find out the answer. Goffey, the goalkeeping coach as well, also pipes up with a question, which is quite nice.
Awesome.
He asks him why his teeth are so white.
Outstanding.
Yeah. Oh, well, good times. It's 5 minutes and it's actually really good content. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you are in Auckland, the game kicks off at 7 o'clock this Saturday night. Get there. Obviously, the team needs your support. Get your friends there. Take your family. Take everybody you know. Get along and support the team. They're playing good football. They could easily win this. Yeah, and you'll have a good time. And get in the fever zone and go drinking with them. Where are the fever drinking prior to the game?
I believe you're drinking at the Morningside Tavern, which is where we were last year. So same spot. And I couldn't tell you what the specials are, but I think we've hooked up something with them again, as we usually do. So
how far is that from the ground?
A couple of minute walk. It's nice and close.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right. And off to the less lubricated W League. Obviously, fewer sponsors than
you
the
say
fever.
Less lubricated.
Leaning back from a mic.
Yeah.
Fester in that one.
So interesting segue.
Yeah, I know. I was more meaning financially lubricated, but
you should have said so.
Well, I did say. Yeah. How about we just cover the last round?
Just roll into the results.
Yeah. I can say.
Sweet. Okay, so we had. I did not write down what dates they were, so I don't know which game was first. No, I do. On the Thursday night fixture, we had the Brisbane Roar hosting Western Sydney Wanderers. Wanderers dispatching them 3-1 with Kristen Hamilton with a pretty fantastic hat trick. The third goal, if you've not seen it yet, you should. The assist and the finish was spectacular. Great little back heel from, and I've completely forgotten her name, one of Western Sydney's younger players. Obviously putting Hamilton through for an absolute thunderbolt. The Raw's goal scored by Riley Basden. Like you were going to say?
No, I think I saw a bit of that replay in it, didn't
yeah.
I?
It was pretty sick.
It was cheeky back heel.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was very good. And then we had Melbourne City hosted Adelaide with a 1-0 win. I wasn't too enamoured with the performance of Melbourne City. They've started quite slow. They're third on the table at the moment. They're racking up the points, but the style of play is still quite slow and defensive and very much the signs of a squad that was, you know, heavy hitters, but still starting to gel. Newcastle Jets lost 3-2 to Canberra. The two goals for the Newcastle Jets were penalties from Tara Andrews. Second penalty, very, very jammy. If there was VAR, it would not have stood. Canberra's goals come from Ashley Crofts, Simone Charlie, and Elise Thorsness with the winner. And then the final game of the round was Sydney FC playing Perth Glory up in Perth. Sydney FC dispatching Perth 3-1 with two goals to Remy Simpson and one for Caitlin Ford for Sydney and the goal for Perth from Caitlin Douglas.
So the W League games are televised live?
Aussie.
Well, no, I'm just thinking from a VAR perspective. Oh. If like the cameras are there...
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
you have to pay for one more.
Yeah, I assume if you're using the cameras and whatnot, you've also got to pay the refs to do the VAR magic. Yeah. I don't know the reason for VAR not being in the W League. If it was, you know, it would be nice. There was a goal in the round before. Denise O'Sullivan for Western Sydney Wanderers scored a perfectly reasonable finish, which was ruled out for offside, despite the fact there were actually two defenders between her and the goal. Mystifyingly, it was deemed to be offside, but, you know, how it goes.
I would assume the reason they're not using VAR is they do use a less camera setup, so that's it. There's still a few cameras, but it's not
and I don't think
anywhere near the level of what you're getting for an 8-8 game. It might be three cameras, and that's all, so maybe they just don't think they've got enough angles to make a lot of those calls.
And the thing with the W League as well is for quite a few teams, like I think Sydney FC have got maybe four or five different home grounds this season, a lot of the stadia or parks, depending on, you know, how sort of salubrious they are, not necessarily set up for VAR. So, you know, there's a lot of questions that kind of, as the season progresses, will certainly be asked.
Yeah, and I think the financial stuff's pretty, I'm not going to say dire, but the amount of money is very minimal. You know, you see going into that first round, some of the teams that only had one training session together before the season started, because that's how late it all comes together, because you don't have the money to spend a 6-week off season, and the way it lines up with the other seasons of women's football means it's pretty tight. If you had the money, you might be going, okay, we'll have a longer season and more of a preseason and, you know, various things, but it's basically pull the squad together 1 week and then you're straight into the season.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like a lot of, you know, obviously most of the teams have kind of got a core group of players who are, you know, playing NPL or NPL equivalents, you know, during the winter was coming together for this. The internationals, like, you know, you look at Melbourne Victory, most of their internationals probably wouldn't have got there until about the week before the first round. And so you've got sort of quite a mixed preseason, which, just through the nature of, you know, as we talked about before, like women's football and the different seasons in the different leagues, it is still quite a mishmash. And the W League is, you know, at the moment really having to consider how does it fit into the wider calendar? You know, does it sync up more with the NWSL with the Victory playing in the Asian Cup last week? They're playing against teams that are finishing off their seasons. The Victory is starting theirs. Like, it's a bit of a mess.
Yep.
It's not very well coordinated. It's not very well aligned. And, so just having to consider, what does that mean?
And moving to lining up with something like that also gives them some challenges in terms of the players, the quality of players.
Exactly.
Because having those internationals here has got to be a big boost
for
attendances
for sure.
And all that kind of stuff. But it's in order to be a more competitive and a better league, you probably need to bite the bullet and let some of that go.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's worked out really nice till now, but, you know, the NWSL, they're also going to be looking at their league and going, well, how do we expand, how do we extend? Whatever that means will have a big impact on the W League, because that's where the flow between the two leagues is happening.
I did notice that Rebecca Stock got in the Team of the Week.
Yeah, Team of the Week.
That's not bad for someone that's just shown up.
Yeah, she's another one that's just sort of pitched up a week or so into the season and, straight into it. But she's obviously coming off the back of the Norwegian season, just finishing off, so...
Oh, she came from Norway?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ouchie.
Yeah.
And we'd definitely leave you hanging. That'd be fine.
Fair.
Yep.
Fair.
Okay, right. I'll throw it to you now.
Cool. So National Women's League this week was the penultimate round.
I was going to throw to you. But, you know.
Start here. And Frosty, go.
So to the NWL.
Yes. So we'll start off with Cats game, home to Southern United. Southern's last game of the season, and unfortunately Cat went down 2-1 to Southern. Yeah, I missed most of the first half because apparently I can't read a bus timetable properly. yep.
To be fair, with Metlink's bus timetables, their guidelines would be euphemistic as well. So
yeah, even I still managed to get that wrong. I still managed to fuck that up. So, you know, I'm taking that L. That was me. That was all on me. But yeah, so positives to take out of the game. Emma Ralston did get Cap's one goal, which puts her in the lead for the Golden Boot.
Nice.
So, and it was a nicely finished goal as well. Loose ball in the area, so she dragged it away from Jade Middlemarch in Southern's goal and clipped her from a pretty tight angle, which was nice. But yeah, Southern's goals. First goal, Emily Morrison, in the second minute. I gather there was a corner put in from Chantel Smith, who is a bit of a dead ball whiz, and Emily Morrison just nipped it in. But the winner was very nice from Renee Bacon, just a thumper from outside the area. And then in the other games, Auckland dispatched Central 2-1, Steph Skilton with two goals, and Natalie Olsen, who plays Wellington United, got Central's one. And then the big game of the round was Northern Lights versus Canterbury Pride, which was a nil all draw.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I kid you not. Yeah. So pretty much all went as expected, to be honest.
How's the table look now?
So at the moment, the Pride are top, the Lights are in second. So obviously just whatever happens this weekend, being the last round of normal season, will just determine whether it's a game in Canterbury or on the shore for the final. Mm. I mean, Canterbury just have to draw or win to secure it. So yeah, I think if you're looking to book flights in the next couple of weeks, probably book them to Christchurch. Capital are playing Central this weekend, Wybop are playing Northern, and the Pride have got Auckland at English Park.
Cool.
Yeah.
So nice.
Yeah.
So overall, not so great for Central?
No, Central are.
We're on Capital, mate.
Oh, Capital, rather. Yeah, sorry. My bad.
Yeah. Disappointing. Yeah.
Okay. Better leave it there then. Move on to the ISPS Handy Prem.
Yeah, so I didn't get down on Sunday to the T-Dubs game. Dave, I don't think you made it either. Frosty, no?
No, I don't sound sadly.
Ella, no? Okay, so I can't really tell you what went on, which is unusual, but other than Team Wellington won 2-1, goals were to Jack Henry Sinclair, and that was a nice goal. The footage is on Twitter. Very nicely taken goal, beats a whole pile of players and slots in beautifully. So check that one out. And McKeon got one as well. And that was to be fair, all the scoring was done in an eight minute stretch in the first half. So it was all over by the 31st minute and ended up 2-1. The rest of the round for the Hand of Prem, Southern knocked over Waitakere United 5-2.
That's a booming result.
Yeah, Hawke's Bay and Easts drew 3-3. Hamilton Wanderers went down at home 4-2 to the Wenix, and Auckland City beat Tasman 2-1. So obviously there's a corollary to all of these results in that today Southern has been docked the 4-0 win over Tasman, and it has now been registered as a 3-0 win to Tasman because they played an unregistered player. And there's some ins and outs on that, which I don't know all the ins and outs. I'm not going to go into it. What that does mean is that Auckland City is on top with 13 points and Team Wellington is in second on 8 points, but they're tied on 8 points with Hawke's Bay, Waitakere and Eastern Suburbs. But it's all about the goal difference as to why they're sitting up, sitting higher. Yeah, so table already starting to look a little predictable. Feel sorry for Southern because that's a massive amount of goals and a massive 3 points that they've lost, and that could easily be the difference between them getting in the playoffs and not.
Yeah. It's from what I understand, the player was registered to the club, was on Comet, a few other things, but apparently there's multiple sets of paperwork that have to be complete, and on one of the sets, he was omitted by accident, and unfortunately Tasman knew about it because they had considered signing him and then not signed him, so he'd popped on down to Southern to pick up a gig. It doesn't feel good, I think, is a nice way of saying.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
It feels a bit garbage.
Yeah, totally agree with you.
I mean, a lot of people are throwing shade at Tasman over this. I don't think this is their fault. If you discover that and you know about that, you're completely within your rights to complain. I don't have a problem with that. I think it sounds like there's some work that needs to be done around the processes. If there are in fact multiple sets of paperwork and this kind of stuff where you believe you can have your players registered, Comet says they're all registered, but in fact they're not. That feels like a problem to me. Yeah, but obviously, every other team is managing to negotiate this process and these systems, so
it's ethically fine. It's just in this situation it feels a little morally wrong, but you know, that's individual situation.
I don't know. I think we've seen players ineligible used before. I mean, it's happened to Auckland City for a result, you know, and no one was saying it was poor of the opposition to complain about that. So
because no one likes Auckland City.
Yeah, but it's the same scenario here. I don't think this is on Tasman at all myself.
I'm quite happy to be a hypocrite about this.
For mine, it's on New Zealand football. Speaking as a software developer, this is a software problem. Mm-hmm. If your system can't handle what are quite simple requirements, and I speak from a lot of years of experience here, these are really simple requirements. A player registration service, I don't care what other features it's got, it's really simple. To not get something that can do all of the
Wasn't it supposed to be designed to do all of this?
It does a lot less than we were told it was going to do when they first announced it as well. And it doesn't even do the bits it is meant to do that well. So, you know.
Like, for example, privacy. It doesn't do privacy.
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem.
That's a massive freaking problem. And this is.
You should quote New Zealand Football to fix their.
It wouldn't even be a big project. I mean, genuinely.
Well, you say that, but you don't know. You haven't seen the back end of the software yet.
I write back end software for a living, Cameron. This is not a difficult.
It still might be a difficult job.
It's not a difficult problem to solve here. This is something that should not be happening. I mean, Tasman, fully within their rights. These are the ropes. But you know, the fact that they've got to put in three sets of paperwork because Comet is a bit glitchy. Piss off. I mean, genuinely.
Tell us how you really feel.
We haven't had a good rant on here for a while, have we?
I mean, this kind of crosses my two fields here, football and soft
rants.
This is all the fields whacked into one.
Have you ever been with him when he's been drinking and talking sport?
Oh, Jesus.
That is top class ranting right there.
Oh, yeah. Old man yells at cloud.
It really is. Old man yells at cloud.
Yeah. It is good stuff. So unfortunate, I think, for Southern there. And I hopefully they can pick themselves up.
They're looking good. Like, they're 4-0, 4-0 win. And beating Waitak 5-2 is excellent.
It's frustrating as well because they've had so many horrendous seasons that if this had happened to them in any of those, it'd be like,
kicking it dead.
But instead, they're finally having a good run of it. And this is what's going to pull them back. That's got to be disappointing as a fan. I mean, ignore you know, the players or whatever. But as a fan, that's got to suck. This is something that feels very outside everyone's control. So that's frustrating.
Yeah, I think. And the only thing that could make it any worse is if they miss out on the finals by under 3 points.
I mean, goal difference.
Mm. Yeah, goal difference. Because they just lost 7 goals there.
To Tasman.
Yeah, that would be injustice of the highest proportion.
Yeah.
So we should probably end it there because it's a bit of a this is a bit of a long pod. But we have one last thing to plug. We have put on a bit of a Patreon.
I like that Cam's just nodded at me. I'm expecting him having set this up to be the one talking about it. So we have started a Patreon for the Phoenix City podcast. I guess. In part because a few people have suggested they'd be happy to support our efforts, but largely because at the moment the pods run pretty much entirely out of our own pockets. Yellow Fever itself doesn't really have the money to contribute anymore. Keeping website ticking over and stuff without the t-shirt sales and all of that of old is a lot harder work, and there just isn't the same financial backing there to do it. So, you know, hosting costs and that are coming out of basically our pocket anytime we need new gear or anything. So any support through the Patreon would be massive help in terms of just keeping things ticking over. And the thing we've committed to about this is not about any of us making any money. So any overrun, if you guys really do get on board and support this, will be going towards things like TIFO funds, but any leftover from the sort of normal activities we do will absolutely be going towards Fever Dreams and the charity stuff that Matt set up there. So I guess if we do somehow end up with lots of money and a whole swag of new gear rather than the aging crap we have at the moment, then it'll be going to a charity cause, which would be fantastic. And Cam is now going to give you the details of where that Patreon is.
So you can find it at patreon.com/PhoenixCity. Yeah, get on there, have a look. We'd really appreciate any support you can give us.
Obviously, we do have some extra content that we'll be putting up there. We haven't finalized exactly what it is, but there will be things like the extra, let's just call them outtakes.
Because the crap that we just cut out tonight because they just were awful.
Yeah, there was four different cuts there that may not be your cup of tea, but obviously there'll be things like interviews and the like of anyone we can get to come along. We have a pretty good record, I think, of getting interesting people and having interesting chats, and that's hopefully what you get out of it. There may be a few other things on there as well if you have a look further down the tiers, but if you're into listening to us, I feel sorry for you, but also give us some money, please. And that's the end of the pod. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you get on Patreon and have a good consider of it at the very least. Thanks, guys, for coming. Sorry about last week.
Yeah, you're forgiven because I've done it four times. Fortunately, it's easier for me to go home and get the gear than it was for you.
Yeah. Goodbye, Ella. Thanks for not forgetting the gear.
You're welcome.
Same
goodbye.
To you, Dave.
I forgot the gear before too, so it's fine.
Well, you didn't do it this time.
Like Cam, I managed to fix it in time that we didn't have to cancel the recording.
Yep. That's a good night to end it on. Bye.
Bye.